There. Can you hear me?
How about now?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, I can hear you. So how's the conference going?
Oh, it's going very well. Thanks for taking a minute to chat. I have a couple of ideas for the show we can talk about when I get back, but there was one I wanted to share now.
Sure. What you got?
I was thinking we should do an episode about data ethics.
I like it. It's topical, and it's about people. It's kind of been our theme for the show.
Exactly.
So how are you thinking about approaching it? I mean, you know, there seems to be broad agreement about what it means generally, but everybody seems to have their own framework. You know, there's the five P's, the five C's, the five C's where three don't actually start with C.
Yeah, and of course you need data governance to make these ethical principles and guidelines actionable. Most companies think they're using data ethically, but without governance, how will they know?
Well, they're going to have to do more than just think soon. Governments are starting to get involved. It's a tough topic.
Yes, it is. That's why I found an expert here to provide some insight for us.
Great. Then let's get to it.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
So, today we talk about data ethics. Great topic, but it can get a bit philosophical and esoteric and all talkity-talk real fast.
It could. But in this episode, we're going to get real on ethics. After all, we make decisions every day about right and wrong, and ethical standards apply to the collection, accumulation, and utilization of data, too.
And you mentioned that our guest wrote the book. I'm definitely looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Carry on.
This week, I read that my car was spying on me. Since I'm somewhat digitally tuned into things, I thought to myself, well, okay, that makes sense. There's lots of gadgets in cars now. And for years, my insurance company has been after me to install another gadget that watches how I drive and tells them what's going on. But I realized, well, now they don't even need the gadget. A bit more research revealed that car companies transmit enormous amounts of data based on your payphone and the car itself, revealing your driving habits, where you shop, where you eat, and scarily, sexual habits. We are talking automobiles here, so, you know, sex, well, I digress. Somewhere in some car company, someone said, sure, let's sell data about our customers' sexual habits to Google, Facebook, etc. Personally, I believe that is not anyone's business, and I also think that the car company executive would not want a sensor in their mattress telling the world how their love life was. Yet, they make my data available. This is what data ethics is all about. It's not right to do something, but it's legal, so it happens anyway. Are there some organizations that avoid this? Sure. But some aren't. Humans are faced with an issue. We can expose our entire lives to a stranger for the enhanced user experience. But we don't have a choice. Yeah, there's laws and stuff that we can opt out. But that doesn't stop the data from being collected, just being used. Do you personally want an unknown entity knowing where you are and what you're doing 24/7? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But that is what data ethics and this topic is all about. How do we address this stuff? And these are not easy questions. These are big challenges for society, not just companies, not just corporations. Well, for sure, after hearing all this week, be nice to each other, because someone is watching.
I have the honor of having on our podcast, which features the topic of ethics today, the guy who literally, with someone else, wrote the book. Let me introduce Mr. Dara O'Brien, my good friend from Ireland. Hello, Dara. Welcome to Rock Bottom.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on. As I used to joke with my colleague Catherine, my co-author, she did the words, I did the pictures. Because
Well,
I'm
good.
really good with crayons.
Well, that's good now.
Yeah.
So you wrote a book on data ethics. First of all, what is that? I mean, we might have a CEO listening to. Oh God, we hope we have a CEO listening.
Okay, so
what
a
is
book,
it?
A book is a section of the internet printed on a dead tree.
Okay, thank you.
You said we might have CEOs listening. I just want to bring it really simple.
Okay. Okay, now we've insulted half of our audience. Well done. Okay. All right, so what are data ethics?
What are data ethics? Okay, data ethics, at its simplest, data ethics are ethics applied to our collection, storage, processing, and use of data.
Mm-hmm.
There is, in my view, no such thing as data ethics, and I'm doing air quotes here. There is the application of ethics to this thing we call data. And this is one of the problems we have in the data management industry, is sometimes we get our verbs and our nouns mixed up, and we get the sequencing of words. When we talk about data quality, no, we're not talking about data and then quality. We're talking about quality and then data.
Right.
Ethics and then data, because we apply the ethics in business, we apply the ethics to the data, and it doesn't exist in a vacuum, because you can't talk about the ethics of data in an organization without talking about the ethics of the organization. And that's one of the key stumbling blocks we sometimes have, because people go, oh, we can't be evil. Well, we can't do evil things with data. Well, you work for Evil Corp Incorporated. It's actually in our job title and mission statement that we will do evil things.
Yeah. So that's key. It makes data governance, data management, data ethics. It makes data is an adjective of an existing important concept. It's not a new noun. It's not a new thing.
Exactly. And then we come to the next bit, which is a lot of people say ethics is but right and wrong, doing the right thing, not doing the wrong thing. But ethics has a cultural component and a social component and an anthropological component, because what, again, this is the debate on data ethics is largely skewed at the moment because it's influenced by what I call dead white guy philosophy. Dead Greeks, dead Germans, dead French people, some dead Americans as well, but mainly dead people, but all Northern, Western Hemisphere schools of thought and philosophy. And that drives a lot of the debate. But if you look to the East, you look at Confucian philosophy. If you look to the Southern Hemisphere, you look at concepts of the African concept of Ubuntu, which for clarity, a lot of people talk about Ubuntu and ethics. It's not just a Linux distribution. It is also an ethics framework, but a cultural framework for ethics. But in Africa, as my colleague Blessing Maturo, who's from Zimbabwe and is doing a PhD on group privacy rights in EU law and what we can learn from Africa, saying you're following Ubuntu is like saying you're following Christianity. There's a lot of different flavors of Ubuntu depending on where you are in Africa. So the idea that there is a single overarching master ethic we can follow, if we had the answer to that, there's 2,500 years of philosophers who wouldn't have had a job. But the key thing is, it's about understanding in the context of the social structure, so the ethic of society, what does society consider to be right or wrong in a particular context? And that's sometimes expressed through laws, like data privacy laws, data protection laws, or laws that say, hey, maybe it'd be a really good idea if you actually spent some money to stop bad guys stealing all the data out of the back door of your company and selling it on the black market. Strangely, we have to have laws about those things for some reason, because people don't want to spend money on protecting an asset, which baffles me as a dyed-in-the-wool borderline capitalist. But ethics is about taking those principles as we understand them from a societal perspective, from an individual perspective, from an organizational perspective, and saying, right, this is the framework we're operating within in terms of what we understand to be right and wrong. Artificial intelligence. Is it ethical that it just scraped all the data from the internet and it's taking the artworks of well-known artists, it's taking the music of well-known musicians, it's taking the voices of well-known singers, and taking and using that data in a way that wasn't intended, wasn't licensed, and ultimately not paid for, let's be blunt about it, is that ethical? Just today, in the last couple of days, Adobe have come out with changes to their terms and conditions for anyone who's using the cloud-based Adobe services to mm-hmm. edit and produce videos or podcasts or things like that. And they're saying, all your data belong to us. We're going to use all your data, all of your creative work to train our AI, which is interesting for anyone who's producing a movie or editing a movie or doing graphics work in a movie that has an NDA over their work, which last time I checked, in the movie industry is absolutely everybody. And then they're going to produce a thing. So you could see things that look like your wonderful CGI fight scene from the movie that's coming out in 2 years' time appearing in a TikTok video next week because someone put in a prompt to generate a thing that, and it generated a thing that looks like that. I keep telling clients, show me what you pay for, and I'll show you what you value. So we've seen Google's chief privacy officer and a number of senior people leaving this week. We've seen Microsoft winding up and firing AI research divisions and AI oversight divisions and ethics oversight divisions. We've seen Google previously firing ethics researchers for speaking out about things. Mm-hmm. So when people say, oh, people and corporations should speak out and protest, yes, do that, but be prepared not to be able to pay the rent next month. Because unless the organization is willing to change and capable of changing and is willing to recognize that it has to change its incentives mm-hmm. and it's how it values itself. So is it just shareholder theory or are they looking for something else? Nothing's going to change.
Wow. Our podcast here, and you know, we talked about a little bit when we started, is to not have sacred cows. So basically what you said is we're following the money and the money showing us what's important. And what happened just this week then?
And if you are stopping investing in some area, you need to be able to show how the culture change and discipline and governance is being cascaded into the organization in some other way. It's perfectly okay for the leader to say, my work here is done. I'm not needed anymore. But it's not okay if you're nailing your leader to a tree. That's a bad sign.
That's really good. Who is a non-technology leader that you admire? This could be anyone famous or someone from your personal experience. You don't even have to name their names, but why are they someone you admire? And how can we apply that to our topic today?
Well, my gracious host, notwithstanding, obviously.
We're not paying for this. We're not paying for this. You don't have to butter it up.
It's another John. It's the guy who plucked me out of call center obscurity back in the late 1990s and stuck me in a job as a project manager for a single view of customer system in the phone company I worked in. Well, John's magic instinct was he seemed to have a knack for finding the people that didn't quite fit anywhere else in the company, figuring out what they were able to do and what would make them interested, and then put them to work doing that. I've carried that forward into my consulting and into my work with my own team. You've met my team.
Yes.
They're all people who are slightly lumpy jigsaw pieces in other buckets, but we seem to work well as a team in Castlebridge. We bring a lot of different perspectives to the table for our clients, and that's the nice thing about the team. So that's the key thing. John inspired me to do that.
Wonderful.
And I saw that working as a thing.
If you could get one thing understood and implemented in an organization around this topic, what would it be? This is the elevator speech. The door just closed. You've got 15 seconds.
Ethics principles, frameworks are only useful if you print them out on two-ply paper and hang them on a nail in the privy. Unless you are taking those principles and cascading them down into actionable policies and procedures and actionable cultural values in your organization that are recognized and rewarded, you are getting nowhere.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to our sponsor, the consultants at Hubris Data Pros. When coworkers question the accuracy of your metrics, you can dismiss their concerns without a second thought because you have hubris. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. I recently heard a webinar speaker say that the purpose of data is to change people's minds. Now, data can certainly be used as a tool to convince others to agree with you. It confers an air of authority. And if you're the only one holding up a chart or report proclaiming, here are the numbers, more often than not, you'll carry the argument. But is the data sufficiently trustworthy? Are you sufficiently trustworthy? Are you a wolf, a sheep, a sloth, or an owl? A wolf won't care to understand the data or to use it ethically. The only thing that matters to the wolf is that the results support its position. Leave it to the other side to disprove it. A sheep won't care either. The data and narrative are taken unquestioningly at face value, and when challenged, sheep become defensive about the narrative without really understanding why. Wolves take advantage of a lack of understanding to advance their own agendas, and the sheep don't ask any questions. Sheep are among the wolves' best advocates. Now, a sloth generally uses the data ethically and without an agenda, but doesn't bother to understand it. You get a question, run a query, publish the results, next. The results may or may not be correct, they don't care. But the owl is observant and informed. The owl casts a critical eye to both the data and the narrative. Neither are unquestioningly accepted, nor reflexively dismissed. The owl asks questions guided by data quality dimensions like accuracy and completeness and consistency. Between now and next time, practice extreme data skepticism. Assume that all data is suspect until it's been proven trustworthy or until you understand it completely enough to be able to interpret it correctly. Don't allow yourself to be bullied with data. Demand details. And on the other side, be a reliable data source and a trustworthy interpreter. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Okay, Dara is back again for the audio Rorschach test, where we try and do something amusing with free audio clips and people's imaginations. Dara, I'm going to play a little bit of music. Music, of course, is evocative. Smells are more so, but we were too cheap to buy the Zoom Smell Sniff API. All right, so I am going to play from a library of randomly selected music, and I want you to relay to me the first thing, related to data, of course, that pops into your mind when you hear this music.
Okay, so you want me to use imagination. Stretch goals, I like them.
So I'm going to play this and go with your visceral gut feel, but please try to keep it in the context of data.
Vendor sales pitch.
Outstanding.
It has that evocative sense of crisis and doom, and then it trails away into nothing. It's IT pitching the data migration project. Because everything is going to happen slowly and by magic. But with an undertone of trepidation.
Undertone of trepidation. Excellent, excellent. And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
Well, I think I understand data ethics, or ethics as applied to data, at least a little better now. And we have a lot of food for thought. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening. And remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about data ethics, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a counter-threaded production, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.